Welcome to Contagious Podcast, Contagious Conversations for Automotive Innovation. I'm so excited to share with you the conversation that we had over on Clubhouse today. This is part of a six-part series focused on NADA 2021 and the inability for us to gather personally. So what we wanted to do is create a platform and a space for us to connect as personally as possible. Some incredible panelists, people in our industry that are pushing forward with innovation. Hope that you're encouraged by the conversation today. Just as a note, if you're not familiar with Clubhouse, it's an open forum platform where panelists, speakers, and audience members are all involved in the conversation. So you'll hear potential of some people talking through each other or questions being asked by those audience members, and hope that you are encouraged by the messages and the innovation and the thoughts that are shared today. So without further ado, let's head over to the broadcast.
So this is Contagious Podcasts, NADA launch off, so NADA plus Clubhouse. And what we are doing this week is trying to increase the personal touch that we're all missing from NADA, and not just NADA, but automotive conferences as a whole. And we're using this incredible platform with so many awesome people to bring everyone into perspective and bring everyone into the room and allow people to have conversations. What we are going to do is we'll turn hand raising off just for a moment, but we'll make sure that here in about 5-7 minutes that we turn that on. I just want to give the couple moderators, panelists that we brought to the conversation an opportunity to start the room and get things going. And then we'll open that up and we'll have a conversation, ask questions, add comments, talk through what 2021 is going to look like from the perspective of automotive and innovation and all of those great things. So I'm going to introduce our panelists and then ask them a couple questions that we can launch the room off of. Todd Smith right here is the CEO of 360 Converge. It's a text marketing automation platform, and is a serial entrepreneur, as I would call him, has been a part of a few tech startups and is an advisor to a lot of others as well. Also does a lot of work with Steve Greenfield and Automotive Ventures, so you'll want to follow him on LinkedIn. And then we have Chad Albertson. He has a passion for marketing technology and data aggregation for sure. He is a CIO at the Vaden Auto Group and works with a few of technologies that they've launched straight from there. So you'll want to follow him as well. So the couple questions that I want to ask you all is one, and I'm throwing a random question at every single room. That first question is, what coffee shop do you go to and how do you take your coffee if you do take it? And if you don't take coffee, what do you drink otherwise? And the second question is, when it comes specifically to data and the ability to not just aggregate it, but also execute with it in the automotive sector right now, what do you see as the biggest challenge as we move forward in this digital space over the next year? So Todd, if you would be willing to take that conversation, and start it first, I would love that. And, welcome.
Thanks, Kyle, man. Hey, first I want to say thanks for, putting this together. I really think this is, fun. I was in the one yesterday with Chip and Tim and everyone. I mean, such great information was passed. So I just want to throw some props out. I know you kind of threw all this together and it's awesome, man. So thanks for that. I've honestly never had coffee in my entire life, so I'm probably not much of a coffee opinion person. I drink green tea though. So green tea is my go-to in the morning after a lot of water. So it's kind of where I start the day. But looking into this year, 2021, I think we're pretty much at the same spot we were last year. I think APIs are going to continue to be the struggle in our space. I think we're just at the beginning of that world. I think that a lot is going to need to be done from the, whether, you know, what I consider the CDK Fertilis level down to the individual, you know, CRM providers, being able to create those APIs and make them highly functional, is to me kind of the strangle of our industry right now, because we definitely live in a world of walled gardens, data protectionism, that probably not a word, but, I think it has really hurt the open architecture and flexibility. And then, you know, you have companies like Tekion that are coming in with this very much open, arms open type structure. And even they are having challenges dealing with the OEMs and big groups who just don't have the API infrastructure to support that environment yet. So I think going forward this year, we're still going to struggle with that. But I'd love to hear what Chad has to say to it.
All right. Well, we'll see. We'll see if Chad, if you want to maybe flip off Wi-Fi, go to 5G or back and forth or something, or close out of the app and come back in. I've seen that work a lot to get going. So I guess what I'll do is I'll ask Todd to, especially because you are on that tech side, just go ahead and speak to the, you know, what you are seeing as far as companies being willing to develop their API structure, not just new companies coming in, but companies that have been around for a long time and historically have made significant amounts of money on the data that they own within the dealership and now are potentially being forced to be in an industry where data ownership is a lot more flexible. And as you're answering that, I'm going to turn on hand raising for those in the audience. If anyone has comments or questions, we'll bring you up and then we'll see. I'll text Chad and see when he gets that connection restored as well. So Todd, if you can answer that for me.
Sure. You know, Kyle, it's a good question. I really believe if you look at this, we have to look at it from a couple different vantage points. It's not just a technology thing. It's a business thing. So for a company like a VIN or Auto Alert or pick any company to just open up an API and let someone have access to all that data, you know, it could be problematic. That data could be used in an unscrupulous way that gets related back to them as the source. There's a multitude of different layers inside this. So all the businesses first have to look at, okay, what are the business ramifications of creating APIs? How do we track it? And then ultimately, how do we monetize it? And then we have to look at the technical side. Some of these older systems have infrastructure that doesn't support the modern architecture very well. So they're going to have to do a lot of, to me, DevOps work to get to the point where APIs are more realistic, that they can build them more at will. So again, you have a lot of those challenges. And I think we're still at that point where most of the bigger guys are figuring out how to monetize it, right? And I think that's where we are. And that's why our industry has been much slower to take the data that's, you know, that everyone's accumulating and make it available in a more open marketplace. I think, you know, one of the things I look at, like Salesforce, one of their geniuses was they knew they weren't going to be able to build everything. So they opened their API, allowed marketplace to exist so people could leverage pieces of their platform and build and enhance far beyond what their own engineering staff was able to do. And then he turned around and he buys the best ones and incorporates them into the Salesforce family. So, you know, I think that type of philosophy would work well in auto. It's just getting us to that point.
Then there's dealership data, getting that passing between the systems and softwares that we're using, potentially with a better flow, a more real-time data set. Not sure if you'd like to kind of launch the start of your comments there. And then also all of our moderators are answering the question, where do you go for coffee and how do you take it? So if you want to take that and kind of launch off on that, and if no one in the room knows, Bob Lanham is the head of automotive retail for Facebook, Instagram, Messenger, and WhatsApp, and is a constant advocate for dealers and dealerships and software providers in the automotive space. And he's been so gracious to be in so many of these rooms on Clubhouse and allow us to not just hear from him, but speak into what's going on Facebook. So with that, I'll turn it over to you, Bob.
Yeah, appreciate that, Kyle. And sorry that I'm late. Where do I get coffee? Blazing Bagels in Commerce Township, Michigan. A now good friend of mine. I didn't know him when he opened the store. Opened up Blazing Bagels, and I drink it black, just the way I believe it's supposed to be. Yeah, I have a huge passion. Sorry, I just walked up the stairs, so my heart is pounding. I need to work on that. I have a huge passion on ensuring that, you know, dealers and software providers can supply the first party data that is so rich, because you know dealers already know something about the people that are sitting in their CRM. And when they're able to remarket against people within their CRM, you know, with a very relevant message, we see the performance just go through the roof. And that's being matched back to a sale or a repair order versus a cost per click or some other digital proxy. So, you know, the same way we can load audiences to target against, we can load sales data to give attribution to. You know, the reasons why we want to work with the partners that have the connections or the data is because we do want to, you know, secure the PII. You know, I've too many times I've seen emails with spreadsheets that are not encrypted, and we're not supposed to be doing that. We're not supposed to be sending people's PII, you know, unsecure over email. So by building these connections directly, it allows PII to be secure and encrypted, and then it also allows for audiences to be always on and always refreshed.
Yeah, I think that is, you know, data security is definitely a big deal. We can't just open up the floodgates without being attentive to that. And obviously, you know, real time, you know, one-to-one connections instead of kind of pass-throughs and you know, three data security agreements with one data chain is kind of an interesting conversation as well. I think Chad is back up, and I'd love to hear his perspective on some of this as well, if you're available, Chad.
We'll try this for a third time. So is that a good mic check? Are we good?
You're there, man.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks for having me up here. Now, as I was listening to Todd, I think, you know, Todd and I might be wrong, but I believe Todd and I share a common passion around the automotive ecosystem and the data needs that, quite frankly, need to be reinvented, in my opinion. And it starts with really the power of the dealer and the voice of the dealer. So, you know, the future is open APIs. We've got Tekion kind of plowing the way for that. Hopefully that brings open architectures and maybe that will allow some big players in the space to come in, like a Salesforce or a Microsoft, and we can build on top of those platforms and maybe even create our own. And it might be a pipe dream. It might be an idea in the cloud. But I think my general opinion in the industry is that we as partners need to be working together to share more data around the transactions and the events and all the signals that are being stored and processed as we build these innovative tools that engage our customers in real time. We've got to put all the, I guess, the politics and the wall gardens, as Todd described it. We've got to set those things aside, and I'm not sure how we're going to get there. I've been in this industry since I was a kid, grew up in the industry, but I've got a passion for data and analytics, and been able to be in these forums and talk with some thought leaders and be on the stage with Bob as well. So it's, you know, I think that's my perception at this point. I do have a few questions for Bob as we go back and forth here, but I did want to test my mic one more time. So, I guess my question for Bob is, as you work with dealers and the partners of dealers across the space, and we have some upcoming challenges with all the consumer ID graph, as we call it on the vendor provider side. Facebook obviously sees millions and millions and millions of consumers, and as we teach our stores on how to build those custom audiences that are typically fed into the Facebook ecosystem by first name, last name, email address, right? We're feeding that data into your system. We're doing it securely. But as these systems starts getting secure itself, where we're losing the identity of the actual mobile device, we're losing the ability to see their IP address, we're losing the third party cookies. You know, what's the trends that you're seeing through that process, Bob, and what's the strategy for Facebook? Is the strategy more engagement of our consumers on Facebook Marketplace to allow you to increase the identity and then help us as a whole to merchandise our vehicles? Or, you know, what's the forward vision of Facebook, if you can talk about it?
Yeah, and let me just start off by disclaiming, I mean, this is an evolving landscape right now, and we're still working through the iOS 14 changes, and, you know, I'm sure other browsers and other mobile software makers will have their own version of how they want to secure their own data. But I think that's what makes this more important today, which makes the data that sits in a CRM system more important than ever, right? As we lose, you know, cookies, and we lose other types of signal, you know, the one signal that we do have is an email address and a phone number that can be matched to an email address and a phone number on the other end. You know, at this time, and I have to disclaim that, at this time, that's not impacted. Right, you know, being able to track someone from one page to another, to maybe a different page, to a completely different website, that might become very challenging. But being able to securely match some very basic identifiers to, again, identifiers on another platform, Facebook to CRM platform, is not impacted, which is why I've, you know, really been pushing, not because of signal loss, but why we need to get to an ad spend to sale measurement versus an ad spend to, I don't know, cost per online conversion, but we don't really know who that person is and if they bought. You know, so, you know, where are we going? I mean, I think for those of you that follow me on LinkedIn, you know, you see that we want to partner with those platforms that have the data so we can securely, you know, do the match and more importantly, provide value for the dealer against a very high performing audience, which is your CRM. I work with a number of different dealers and dealer groups where they've started to hire, some have started to hire people specifically to mine their databases, basically digital CRM managers, and they're segmenting audiences to load or to set up one time and have them always refresh because they perform, especially when you match back to a sale or a repair order. And I think that's the key right there. If your measurement is still online measurement, there's going to be some challenges and severe ones. But the second you can get into an offline sale, like a repair order or an actual sale of a vehicle, then we can start to move the business forward. I hope that answers, Chad.
Yeah, I could probably dig in a little bit more, but we don't need to. We can kind of pivot over. I'm kind of curious around the perception of, and I know Todd's got a product that he's been supplying to dealers as well, but your perspectives, either Todd or Bob, on around COVID and the trends in 2020, as more consumers engaged, how did you see those trends happening, and are they starting to flatline, or are you still seeing a rise in more consumer behavior online to get those consumers interacting? Because obviously we're talking about tracking a consumer, tracking the events, tracking the path to the sale. Bob, you talked about matchbacks, and that's obviously the goal conversion. That's the end road. But is there more population? Is there more consumer population online? What do those trends look like from your guys' point of view?
Chad, you want to, or Todd, you want to take that first?
Sure. I think it's interesting, Chad, you bring this up. I think we were talking about it a little bit yesterday, that, you know, I think consumers, look, I think digital retailing is great. I think digital retailing is something we invented, versus, you know, a consumer being driven to say, I'm only going to buy my car via digital retailing. I think this is a layer inside our business we created because we just don't have good infrastructure to begin with. So we have to create this another tool or application because our sites aren't designed for, to me, to complete transactions. They were always just informational. So if I connect this up, I believe that, you know, consumers, we saw them trend up to buying more online, dealers focused more on that, but I think we are now edging back the other way, where consumers will just go back to doing business how it's always been done, because that's how dealers do business. So where the dealer was super lean and mean during COVID, had desk managers, they only had three, they're working the deals, the BDC guys handling it start to close, they're really doing what I consider this digital retailing farce thing, like process, that now that they're back, everyone's to work, they're settling back into the way they've normally done business. So I don't believe we're going to see this massive shift that will continue. I think it's like a ebb and flow of a tide. It went out a little bit, now it's gonna come back. But I think there's lessons that we can learn from it that if we reapply to the 2021, we can leverage human capital better organizationally. And we have to first start with the processes and then figure out how to engineer the technology versus go build technology and cram your people into that process. So.
Yeah, Chad, you asked about usage, and I'm guessing you're referring to the usage on Facebook and Instagram, as well as Messenger and WhatsApp. And yes, it was publicly stated that our time spent and our usage dramatically increased in 2020. But I have to be honest, it's a hard question for me to answer because we already had very, very high usage and high scale in terms of people using our platform. So we already had that. We just obviously grew that and people just spent more time. You know, one of the things that I learned and would love the feedback if there's any dealers in the room, you know, one of the things I learned from working with dealers last year was, you know, when the pandemic hit, they were forced. It wasn't an option, but they were forced to follow the protocol that they were taught in GM school, which was to evaluate your top three expenses. And those top three expenses were payroll, advertising, and marketing, floor plan. And if you look back at what dealers did, those were the first three adjustments they made in March. And some of them, you know, what they learned, at least as it relates to my role, because I can't speak to the payroll and their floor plans, but what they learned was they needed to know exactly what they were buying. And many did not. And they needed to map it out. They needed to put the cost to it. And once they did that, even Auto News reported on it. They made adjustments. They found platforms that they were overspending on, and they maybe found platforms that they were underspending on. But at the very least, they're starting to pay closer attention to one of their largest expenses. And my team often says, you know, what you buy and how you buy your second or third largest expenditure clearly defines your profitability because it's such a large expense. So, you know, to go back to your question, we've always had very high usage. It did grow. We actually have more people on Facebook and Instagram. But what I would say is I think, and I hope dealers continue this trend, they've gotten much smarter with that, with their advertising and marketing.
Thanks, Bob and Todd. So, you know, respectfully, hey, Bob, can you close your ears for a second? I'm gonna say a dirty word. It's Google. So yesterday there was a Google talk by a head of automotive, and in the presentation there was some really interesting information around just like what Todd brought up, the whole trajectory to get to digital retailing. There's a few studies in there and some tips and techniques and whatnot. And what popped out for me was that, you know, Brian Benstock's story at Paragon, that there was a before and after picture, at least in the study, right, of 1% of car purchases were done completely outside the dealership. And during the month of May, he did 100% of them, delivering 775 vehicles sold. And then there was, I tried to pick through and read in between the layers on that, you know, and one of the lines in there was aligning efforts across all tiers. And then there was a perspective of a recommendation from Google to the OEM and to the dealer. And just I'm paraphrasing, but the OEM, what actions should be measured during the research journey? That's the question from Google to the OEM. And the dealer, what actions should be measured during the sales transaction? And why I bring this up is I think we've touched upon it, right? So Todd touched upon it in his intro around data and data sharing and APIs. You know, there's 30, 30, 35, 40 plus digital retailing tools. How are we even going to get to that rethinking our measurement strategy as Google recommended yesterday, when the OEM and the dealer and especially our tool and our provider are not talking to each other? Right. So how do we measure that? How do we get those events?
Chad, I'll even up level it, because you bring up a fantastic point. You know, the coordination between tier one to tier three has been a talk for a very long time, an absolute long time. And I think we'll get there. I think you'll see some platforms here in the near future that will help align. But I'll even up level it in terms of understanding at the dealer level your holistic media plan. I have a very big passion in what's called media mix modeling, which is purely understanding everything that you're buying, right, Magnet, and how the model actually drives impact or sales. And you know, you mentioned for me to close my ears on Google, and it's funny because I've traveled with Google for years, and we're always on the road shows together. And what people don't realize is that you know, other media plans or other media platforms drive search activity, and we're one of the larger drivers, right? So any product or service that is advertised with us, you may not see a click on Facebook, but because of the ad, it pushed the person to do a search for that brand or that product or service. Media platforms work together. They don't work in a silo, and that's so important. And I think, you know, going back to my story, that's what dealers learned in the second quarter of last year when they started to look at their advertising and marketing, which is you can't look at report A over here, then report B over there. It's because they all work together, not in a silo. So, you know, I've got a very close relationship with Google because I need them, because my advertising is driving a search.
It's really good. I'm going to go ahead and just for the people that have joined, we're launching off of the idea around NADA and the fact that we can't all be in the room together, and allowing us to have conversations and questions and also hear from some of the people that are thinking about what it means to do better in our automotive industry over 2021. And we've got Todd Smith, Chad Albertson, and Bob Lanham here as panelists. And my name is Kyle Mountsey. I'm the host of Contagious Podcast and Marketing and Business Development Director at Nelson Auto Group. If you are in the room, follow the moderators, the speakers, and anyone in the audience that you're not currently following. This is a great platform to make connections all across the automotive industry and have new conversations. And so some rooms are wide open, some rooms are a little bit more panelist A driven. This one is just a little bit more Q&A driven. We do have hand raising on, so if you have questions for any of the moderators up here, please don't hesitate. Raise your hand, enter into the conversation, ask questions, add value to what we're talking about. But what I want to go ahead and do, we've got a couple people that have raised their hand to either ask questions or add value, and I want to launch right off into their questions. So we'll do that. And Vasilis, and again, can you let me know how to say your name? Because I feel like I've said it a few times and I'm just guessing. Before you ask your question or add your comment, welcome to the stage.
You, Kyle, you nailed it. It's Vasilios, or for short, Vasili. I've been listening to you guys the last, you know, week and a half, and the value you bring is phenomenal. The one thing I think about, listening to Bob, listening to Todd and Chad, is this idea is a culmination of aligning efforts at all tiers. And I think for at least the tier three dealer, one thing that I think the main mission is identifying what is the brand promise at the tier three level. And when you look at a GM who's passionate about defining what that is for their dealer outside of the OEM as the brand, right? There's always a conflict. And I think whether it's, you know, the translation of data or just in general. And so I guess my question is, or my comment is, when we think about process, the first example I think of is the process of translating OEM incentives to your digital advertising, then subsequently your website. And from an API standpoint, that's just very, very difficult. And it's not as digestible as it should be. And so if you're a dealer and you're trying to create a brand promise like Carvana's 7-day test own, and you want to compete with that at the tier three level, or you're inspired by that to define your brand promise, I think that's what makes this such a challenging exercise, is we don't have the infrastructure set up in a way to do that quick enough. And I think that, you know, what does the near-term success look like for developing that? Because if you can figure that out, or at least get close to it, I think it's progress. And that's what I think is so exciting about this talk, is I don't think we're too far away from defining that for a tier three dealer.
Yeah, so let me ask you to expand on that and maybe give a little insight to what you're thinking. What I'm hearing you say is that there is an element of balance in the way that data flows between the OEM and the dealer, both customer data as well as go-to-market strategies, that needs to be enhanced in order for the dealer to go to market in the right way. But you brought up an interesting, you gave two pieces there. One, that it was like building your brand, your what you do locally, but also OEM incentives. How do you see that marrying into this data-driven mentality of going to market? Is there one that needs to be stronger or one that needs to pull back, or do they need to live together? And how is the data going to be able to provide us the opportunity to do that better?
Yeah, frankly, and I'm speaking to the choir, we know it's messy. And so I think an API is the solution in the near term. And it's going to take political collaboration on the OEM's part to translate and digest the incentive data to better merchandise and better get that information down at the tier three level. And so, you know, my input is, you know, on the pain point of how do you compete with Tesla? How do you compete with Carvana? We have these conversations kind of, you know, in conjunction with this. We first need to solve how to translate that data quicker, because a lot of, and I guess this, I'm biased because a lot of my experience is in media, but, you know, we spend a lot of time merchandising, creating personalized creative when the goal is personalization, and it combats brand consistency, right, for the dealer, because it's so messy of a process. But if we can clean that up and we move quicker, we move more efficiently from a merchandising standpoint, advertising perspective, with these solutions, we can better define brand. We could better be consistent with brand. And I think that in turn is going to lift all tides.
So are you speaking more about big brand, OEM brand, or local brand when you're talking about that data flow?
Yeah, that's a fun, phenomenal question. I think for tier three specifically, the dealer or a GM, when they're talking about my brand, I think local and what that brand is. But they have influence, right? It's a collaboration with the OEM. And so when we're thinking about products and the best practice for how do you translate incentives and translate merchandising and moving that inventory, that's a deep collaboration with the OEM. The OEM would have to do that at scale and provide the tools, the APIs available, so that any partner, vendor, from the website to the advertising front can access that, I think, in a digestible format. But that in turn is really to buttoned up the brand at the local level, right? Which I think is what I think is a huge pain point, or what I find GMs indirectly complain about, is that they're trying to figure out their own narrative and voice, whether it's customer experience on the floor or it's online.
So Vasilios, I kind of want to unpack what you said, because it's a very important topic, and it is, I think, to your keyword, it is messy, at least with the OEM incentives as the data point. There are some other data points that we can talk about. So there's a few key stakeholder partners in the space that provide the incentive data. Some of them do it better than others. Obviously, we have all our digital retailing tools and our websites that consume that similar data. They've got various cleanup around that messiness. But I think you bring up a really, really good idea and a really, really good topic around what if there was a world in which those incentives and the national incentives, the regional incentives that affected the LMA or that tier three, what if that was free flowing? What if that was just not an issue? What if there was no wall garden around that? How would that innovate the products that are in the space? How would that innovate the digital retailing tools? How would that innovate our tools when we're communicating to a customer? And then on your side, as we're buying media, how would that innovate us in order to change the offer, change the targeted offer? Could we get down to what's more so in the packaged goods side, outside of automotive, where they get down to the micro level? They get down to the individual gas station selling Coca-Cola on the shelf, or a supermarket selling a certain product at a faster rate. Our OEMs are not that sophisticated with their incentives to motivate our vehicles moving off our lots quick enough, right? Subaru is probably the only one that actually has a turn rate in a new car standpoint that's down towards a 30-day rate. So I think I'm hearing you say that, where that data can then be mobilized and we can get better at presenting the right offer, at least that's pushed or incentivized by the tier one. And then I think your second topic was around, how do we get the dealership and the dealer body to represent their own brand and have their own influence and pick and choice around how they want to represent themselves? And that's not necessarily the incentive. It normally is a 30-day cycle with the creative agency that they raise their hand, they pick through the incentives, and they say, hey, I think that one's good. I'm going to run my 30-second spot, my 15-second spot on OTT. I'm going to do traditional. I'm going to do, they pick their offers. That seems to be the common conversation every month. But is that even the right thing to do? You know? So you bring up a really cool topic. It's I'd like to explore it more offline or even on the stage here, but I think I heard you right.
Yeah, you nailed it. I think it comes down to, like, I look at my, like, the media process, and I look at that process and I say, what's the big glaring sign here? From my job to the sales rep on the floor, in the end of the day, we're concerned about productivity. Selling a car is not buying, you know, is not buying something off Amazon.com, right? It's a process. And I think finding these solutions is about making us more productive. And productivity is going to be the solve to a better customer experience, and is going to better define, you know, brands, I think, at the local level on the tier three side, but definitely at the LMA component.
Great conversation. I want to make sure and give time for Zach before we, before we get too close to the top of the hour. Zach, welcome to the stage, and what do you have for us, questions or comments?
Hey guys, been listening in, really love this. And let me give some context first, and the question would be for both Todd and Bob. So I run a CRM company, and one trend that I've been noticing, and it kind of started around last year, is vendors requiring security audits. For example, for Google, for Gmail, having sign-in with Gmail in our app, they require a $50,000 security audit, and they only approve two firms to do so. And I'm seeing even more firms do the same thing, where before integrating with you, they require a hefty security audit or some sort of hefty integration fee. And from my standpoint, I think it stops innovation for instance, like a smaller vendor in auto, if they were looking at a $50,000 fee on an annual basis, just to have the sign in with Gmail button, that might stop them from integrating with Gmail. So Todd and Bob, what are your thoughts on some of the API fees, security costs just to integrate? And do you think that stifles integration and innovation in the automotive industry?
Go ahead, Todd.
Thanks, Bob. I've had to jump at this one. Thanks, Zach. I think you set that up pretty well. I 100% agree that our industry has been strangled by fees and integration costs to slow innovation. And look, it's pretty obvious. Look at the end products. Look at the fragmentation across and lack of, to me, true innovation in our space. Our space, to me, is much more of a incremental improvement, not innovative. And there's a huge difference in what I just said there. We're really good at just kind of creeping along. We're not making true innovation plays inside the space because of the limitations of certain vendors that have limited the amount of flow of data, or worse, put a big toll road that does not allow the small companies to get a foothold onto the playing field. And that is why I've written before about this. I think we live in auto is very cottage industry laden right now. You have all these small players that do a single tool, and they do it better than, let's say, the bigger products out there. But unfortunately, because of this connection, it requires and puts that burden onto the dealer to manage that. And that only slows the dealership down, creates inefficiency, creates bad, all the way, if you track that down, all the way to the consumer, creates bad experience for the consumer. Because let's use an example where, let's say, Zach, I know your CRM, I know you target really well with Selly for used car dealerships. And, you know, one of the things that crosses my mind is, let's say they're using text message on your platform, and then the consumer opts out of texting from your platform. But that dealer is also signed up with Podium because they're trying to gain reviews. Well, now they're texting the customer again from another number, and they'd already opted out one place, but now they're not opted out on the next platform. And this is the problem when the dealer has to be at the center of everything for it to work. And they have to own the customer record. They have to own, to me, that's the most valuable thing. And everything should spring from that. And a dealer should be able to choose, I want to use these services or not, and plug and play. We're just not there. It is like that in other industries. And Bob, you probably have more expertise in that. Other industries have much more open infrastructure that enables those types of interactions to happen.
Yeah, this is a tough one to answer, because ultimately it is up to the platforms to essentially run their business how they choose to run their business. And if they include a fee, I guess they include a fee. You know, this goes back to, and I'm going to speak a little bit out of turn because I can't remember exactly, but I believe the was it Arizona or Colorado dealers, you know, suing a couple of platforms for access to their own data. So it's interesting. And I think we will evolve, and I hope we will evolve. And you know, Zach and I know each other, and Zach's got a great platform called Selly Automotive, which is a CRM platform, predominantly in the independent world, I think, right, Zach? And that's he's correct. built off of our API. So thank you for that. It's a tough one for me to answer because it's up to the partners, obviously, to run their business how they choose to run their business, and if they want to charge, I guess they can charge.
Yeah, interesting topic indeed, and I think we've only started to unpack it. There's so many players at hand, from vendors, from big data aggregators to dealers to OEMs, and getting everyone on the same page, opening up the type of communication where data flows from, understanding who's gonna hold the data at a paid level, who's gonna release the data. To be able to increase the integration, And all of that is wrapped in this. The dealer is really the one that is trying to help, you know, manage all of these really, really big companies and their data laws and rules and what they're willing to do with data. But the dealer is the one handicapped. And so I think when we're talking about NADA or dealers coming together, it's really, how do we put the next step forward? How do we continue to have these conversations with the, you know, the Bobs of the world that are saying, hey, we're willing to look at this for you, the dealer. We're willing to push forward with data. We have to have those conversations. We have to push our OEMs, our vendors, as dealers to play fair in this space so that we can execute quicker and more effectively. And really, all that comes down to the question that we have to ask is this better for the customer? If it's better for the customer, then we need to get after it as an industry. And I think it is better for the customer because they're going to get better messaging. They're going to get better service online. They're going to get better service in our showrooms. And then we're going to retain more of those customers. And the fear that everybody has is that there's going to be online retailers that come in and swoop in or steal our business. And we know that's not better for the customer, because the relationships that we have with our customers that are one-to-one personal relationships are so good and so strong. And if we can utilize data to make a better customer interaction with our industry, then we win. And so all of it goes not if we're not after it for what makes it better for the customer. So I want to appreciate everyone in this room for the conversation, for the comments that you've had. Todd, Chad, Bob, Vasily, Zach, thanks for coming on and having this conversation and being willing to press into it. If you're in the audience and you got anything out of today, write it down, take action on it. If you want to have more conversations, I'm sure everybody on this panel is willing to have those. You can find us on LinkedIn. You can tap my bio, go to nada2021.club to find the events where they may find themselves or be a part of over the next 3 days. Again, this has been NADA. We didn't get to the politics, but data in automotive. We're doing these events throughout this week. This is the third of six. Make sure and join us this afternoon at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central for an incredible look into the future. We've got some amazing panelists coming on this afternoon. You're going to want to catch that. And we will see you then. If you did miss any of this, or you have friends that would love to be a part of and hear this conversation, it will be available via Contagious Podcast, which is Contagious Conversations for Automotive Innovation. My belief is that we need more people talking and not less, and we need everybody in this room leading innovation so that we can be better as an automotive industry to attract better employees and more employees to come and serve in our industry. That will translate to consumers wanting to do business with us. So again, thank you so much for joining the room, for speaking in the room, Chad, Bob, and Todd, and for being panelists today. What a pleasure to have this opportunity.
Thank you, Kyle. Nice work. Thanks, everyone, for joining.
Yeah, thank you, Kyle.
Thanks, Kyle. It was awesome, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Kyle.
Thank you so much for listening today. We hope you enjoyed that. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and the innovation and the insights that happened on Clubhouse. As always, please like, share, comment, give this to those in your workplaces or friends or family that may be encouraged by it. And what we need from you is for you to be a part of this conversation, to have this conversation with more people and not less. We need more voices and not less in our industry pushing forward toward innovation. And that includes you. So as you go forward, as you listen to this, as you think about this, make sure you don't have just internal dialogue, have conversations with more people so that we can provide an innovative atmosphere where more people want to become a part of it and work in the industry as well as do business with us. Thanks for listening to Contagious Podcast.